Mr. Mattinson Reel 2, you were just telling me how impressed you were when you heard what exactly you were supposed to do in Burma.
Well, it told us that our job would be to blow the bridge at just outside Tonglong Village. And it was near a level, near the main road. And it had a level crossing, railway level crossing. And he was showing us the area that we were going to battle in. And when he'd finished there, he turned to us and he says, well, I think you'd better go and get your suppers and get over to the next field, he said, that there's something important will be announced there. And they're showing the film, he said. So where I went, when they'd been late, he was at the back. And Jackie Cooper, the film star, was on the projector. And halfway through the film, Colonel Cochran turned the generator off. Jackie Cooper turned around the crowd around the floor. And he said, oh, I'm sorry, sir. And he said, he asked him to hand in the mic. He said he'd got an announcement to make. And he told him, I'll try to be as exact as I can. He says, he just said, now lads, the time has come quite near. It's tomorrow night, we shall fly in, and we'll let the Japanese where he's hurt from. Well, he said, fighting the guts for the Japanese. And he said, I wish you all good hunting. He said, and I know that some of you will not be coming back, but you know what we're like, and I know that you'll do your best. And as he was going away again, he said, good hunting, men. And there was a big cheer went up. And then he showed the rest of the film then. And the following morning, at first I wasn't supposed to be flying in till the 6th of March. And at about 10:30 the following morning, they came up to me and said, you're flying in tonight. You're going in number 5 glider. So I flew in with some American engineers and some of our engineers. And what happened was that we were told to go and sort the, help clear the path ready for the C-47s to fly in the following night.
Can you describe how you went in, what it was like?
I could just see out of a little window on the side of the glider, and you could see fires burning all over. We flew over towards where the Irrawaddy had come back in again. And you could see the Irrawaddy, and you thought it was a road. It just looked like a road. And anyway, the pilot told us it was the Irrawaddy. Anyway, we came in, and as we landed, he said it looked like it's hell of a mess down below there. He said, I'll see what I can do. He said, I'm looking for some trees, what I can get into. And at first I thought, what the hell is he going into trees for? And what it was, he was flying in between these two trees. And the outpull of the wings came off. And, just the body went on a little bit further. Everyone got out all right.
And this was at White City?
No, this was at Broadway. That was the night of flying in on the 5th of March by the glider.
Were there masses of gliders wrecked all over the place?
Oh, aye. They were scattered all over. Bodies all, well, when I say bodies all, quite a number of injuries. wants a nice night. Anyway, Lieutenant DeWitt went up to Central Depot, and Colonel Ellison was sat in a jeep. They walked up to him and he said, "I'm glad to see you, engineers." And he said, "I want you to go and work with our lads." He said, "Get over there." But that night, two of the officers of the American engineers was killed. And what happened was that we went working with them. And the following morning, I was told that I'd be a unit guard for when the remainder of our lads came in. You know, short, to put him by the dispersal points, taking them to the dispersal points. And then they were given jobs, what jobs to do. You know, clearing the bushes and cutting the lantern. And making it level. And they worked at it all through the night, all through the day. There was very, very little sleep had by anybody. But they were digging and clearing the pathway, the main pathway. Then they had portable lights that they laid out. And they had a small generator. And the following night, the C-47s came in landing, bringing men and equipment. And hours that night, I think the C-47s of our group was on number 7. And Captain Butler was with them. There was three C-47s, you know, like the equipment and wheels and what have you, that came in. I had to show them up to where they were. You know, to the dispersal area, and there they were given jobs off Lieutenant DeWitt where to work and clearing the strip, and they were working there for 4 days, and we got our marching orders. Then we set off on our own at about 10:30. And we went climbing the hills into Central Valley. And it was somewhere around about, be about 5 o'clock, 5:30, when we came up to this hill. And he said, "Oh," he says, "we'll leave that till morning." And he went 1,500 feet high it was. And you'd go up 3 and come back 4. It was terrible to all, but you know, it had been raining. It was all slippy. But after we marched for about 5 days, we had an airdrop, and it was just the explosives that we wanted for the bridge, because we didn't take it with us. It was dropped to us by the air, from the air. And it was in a valley, and it had that elephant grass, and it wanted like razor, that, you know, the grass, like razor blades, used to get cut on it. And we had one man broke his leg, where the elephants had been, its foot had gone sunk in the soft section of the grass. And he was walking along when he went down it, of course, the weight of his pack, and he broke his leg. They had him flown out the following morning. You know, they had him flown back to Broadway. And in a supply truck, you had 5 fires in a line. and what you you got your command to light your fire, got a bit of petrol kept with us for this purpose in case it was wet, so that you could get a good fire going at the shortest possible moment. Anyway, we had the fires all going, blazing away, and the aircraft came, you know what, was in contact with wireless. And we saw it coming round on the signal. He signalled, and when he got the green signal off Captain Butler, and he went round once, come back again, and then he flashed the green twice, and then it was the drop. Well, six shoots come out at once, you know, for the drop. And we had a free drop as well. And
a free drop?
Yeah. That was a fodder. You used to push it out with no shoot on it. You had to be careful of that. Because if it bounced. As a matter of fact, when one bloke killed, broke his neck.
Were all six shoots recovered?
Oh, yeah. Mine of the shoots was very important. Because the Burmese, they wanted cloth. And we used to barter for it. Oh, we used to barter for the cloth.
Was it silk?
No. No, it wasn't silk. But, I forgot the material, what it was. I could look it up, but it didn't take too long. I don't know if you've read Michael Calvert's book,
Yes.
Prisoner of Hope. That's about one of the best books that has been wrote about. Me.
What did you think of the supplies that you got from the drop?
Our supplies that we got then was just a top-up of K-rations. And it was all the explosives, the PK, the safety fuse, the cortex, and, Armano. The safety fuses, there was gun cotton bricks. The gun cotton bricks were to blow a hole in for the Armano.
What was morale like by this stage?
Oh, morale was hard. Everybody was raring to go.
What happened next after the drop?
Well, after the drop, we had what they call them safe areas. Every man didn't go to that drop. And the packs that came out, they had rings on them. So you could put them on the mules right away. You know, you didn't have any trouble. And so you got the mules and you put the rings on, fastened it on them, put another one on the other side, and then off you went to the safe area. And they'd probably have a cup of tea ready for you then, when you got back. And of course, with it being dark, you couldn't do so much. So they waited till first daylight. Then after stand down, they sorted it all out.
Had you run into any villagers by this stage?
We had, yes, but they were all, there was no occupants at all in the. There was just an odd man in the village, and he's probably keeping his eye on things. But. You see how it went on, right through the campaign, the supply drops, they were all the same, except when you were in White City, then it was general then.
So what happened next to you?
Well, we marched off then, with Sergeant Bottomley, and he took two men, and he was told to see if the road was just a little bit further, and he wasn't long away. Come back, he said, you're right near the road. We was on facing, well, that's looking south. The left side, we run into hills. the other side was all covered in lantana and small shrubs and bushes, and it was all flat. So he said, well, we'll cross over the road and we'll get that going that way, we'll make better time. And we walked along the road, you know, just away from the road in case any jacks was on the road, but there was none. But we came to this level crossing that I mentioned to you before. It was about a chunk about as deep as this room here. It was to Tetley, when the monsoons come on to take the water away. And further down was the lead into the main channel, where the bridge was over, that we were going to blow up. And it was a five-pier bridge. It was five-pier, and the girders was H-girders, and they were two foot six. H-girder, 2 foot 6 H-girder. Anyway, all of them were set out, you know, the brain guns and what have you, and we'd started to lay the charge. And next minute, shout came, Jack truck coming down the road. So Captain Buckle gave the orders that there was no firing to be done, because we were too near the village. And anyway, he was coming down that fast. He got to level crossing, where lines was raised a bit, and he pulled up that fast, he stalled his engine. You know, with it being hot out there, this is what you get out there, because the gas, you know, the fuel gas, instead of it being liquid going in there, it goes to gas and it doesn't ignite. But the jacks, there were men in the back, and there was one man in the front. And then I thought, well, why aren't they getting up to give them a push? And apparently the push room did men in it. So we didn't touch them, you know, instead of giving our game away, what were we doing? And we sat looking at him for about 3/4 of an hour. Well, one of our chaps was spitting around him. He was sat near to him. Anyway, the work stopped on the bridge. I was on the bottom, in the bottom of the
Chong.
And I was with a bloke that we called Slim. He lived, come from Liverpool, and we was putting all the equipment that they wanted, you know, the shelf for certain things, and we put it in a bag, tie a rope on it, and they'd all it up. And this is what we was to bring me, fetch me, carry me. Lieutenant DeWitt and Butler was helping with the charging.
So the Japanese truck just eventually went off?
It went away. Well, we couldn't do anything, and later we found out that the Japs had made their HQ at Tongmong.
So the men must have been very disciplined not to have given their place away.
Yeah. Well, the job was only half finished.
So how did the bridge go up in the end?
Well, we put lead pencil on it for 24 hours. That was to give us plenty of chance to get away and to cause confusion. And it was funny that Lieutenant DeWitt came to me, he said, I'll give you the honours of pulling the pin out.
Give you what?
He said, I'll give you the honours of pulling the pin out of the lead pencil. It's lead that stretches. You may have heard of it. And whatever thickness it is, it's done to a T. It takes that long, you know, the thickness. If it's thin, it protects, you know, it's a shorter one. If it's thicker, it protects longer.
And so was it successfully blown?
Oh, yes. Oh, they checked on it later on. It was a good job. Well and truly done.
But you went off and just left it?
And we just went away and left it. We plotted on, and then we went into, you know, we found ourselves a safe area. They keep calling them safe areas. We bedded down for the night and had a sleep and, you know, had our tea, and following morning had our breakfast and tea, and we went back on the road again. And we was to make a bit of time, and our job then was to harass the chaps. And two men, our two point men, they come running back, and they told Butler, he said, some chaps on the road, I'm in a roadside rest. He said, I couldn't tell you how many there is there. He said, but it's quite a lot. So he went and had a look himself. And what happened was, they came back quick. He was running back, and he gave this plan to DeWitt. And we went to the other, we crossed over the road to the other side, because it was on a bend. And there was a clearing where the Japs was. And there was a pathway through. And what happened from there is that Captain Butler, his signal was that when he'd thrown some grenades, he said to be ready at the... He was on the far side of the clearing. And we were all in a good firing position. And he threw these five grenades. And I heard him shout, "Here, you yellow bins, there is between you." And he threw five hand grenades. Next minute, we heard some screams, and then the Japs come running in. Then we heard a whistle go, and they'd stopped. They were doing all the firing, we never fired one round. And later, we found out that there was... five had got killed and seven wounded. That was Butler and his hand grenades. Anyway, what happened was they came flying through these woods, and they didn't come into the Japanese officer didn't see the clearing until last minute, and he blew his whistle. And they all stopped dead. And the man over on my right hand side, he got up and he threw up, sprained the ankle. And a bullet had gone right through his heel. Right through the... It was on the side, his left side. Gone right through his heel there and come out through the bottom, through his shoe. So we carried him back. The engineers made a beer. And carried him back. When we got him back, we got his can out to brew up. The bullet had gone right through his neck. Right through his pack. Right through some key rations.
Was he evacuated?
Yeah. The following morning we made an air landing strip. We were telling you what we trained with, the medals, model orders. That was our last job with them, was training with the making these airstrips for the LPs. Anyway, he got evacuated to Broadway. And we got word later that she'd had a tube inserted into the hole. And it was all right.
What was the next thing you did in the jungle after this grenade attack?
Well, what happened was we went to... We went up into the hills, and we made a cup of tea. There was a telly before. When we found his nest and the bullet had gone right through it. Anyway, we had to make him a cup of tea, and the following morning, butler said he'd found a place, a possible place where they could have been thrown out. So we got the light plane came in and landed, and it knocked his undercarriage off. He'd been veered over too far to his left, and it rut, and he lost his undercarriage. And then another plane came, and he took him and the pilot away, and we put an axe into the petrol tank, set it alight, you know, took whatever we could off it, and set the aircraft alight. So then we got a message then to head for White City. When we got into White City.
Was that far away?
Quite a distance away. Anyway, when we got in, somewhere around about 4 o'clock it'd be. In the afternoon when we got there. They could tell we were marching all that time, you know. We had to be in that night. She told us we'd got to be there before 5 o'clock. Anyway, it was in at 4 o'clock. He came and met us as we was coming down the road. And there was one of these tankettes at the side of the road that had been knocked out by the lance.
Tankette? Small tank?
Small tanks. You know, he could shoot a pea shooter with them, you know, knock them out a pea shooter. He'd been knocked out, there were 3 dead Japs. Then that night, when we was in our positions, all we could hear was clang, clang, clang up the road, and it was the Japs clearing it.
How?
Well, they had trucks. They were working on it. You could hear them. But it was a bit dangerous going out to open ground. You just let them do it. it's a bit scary. That's our first night in there. You got used to it later on. Then later on, a 7th Leicester Regiment had made a raid on Tonmong Village, and as I told you, it was a Japanese HQ. And what and all they got. They got all the paperwork. They got everything. Troops that was coming in and one thing or another. It was full of information. Where they were going and everything. And that gave our aircraft. Some of our lads went out. And they were spying at them, you know. They had OPs watching them, and they were giving the signal to the aircraft. They were bombing the road, they were coming up in daylight. And it was a 24th IMB, and there was